I'm shaking a lot. This is like my third time coming here, and today of all days, I chose to have a go with the flow day, and this is about as go with the flow as I can handle. But my sobriety date is March 11th, 2024, and I kind of got thrown into service pretty early on, and I accredit that to how my program has grown over the year. And I started out, it's funny that they said carry the message happening next year, because at about a month and a half sober, it was 420, and I was like really sad that I wasn't going to partake. And they were like, there's this carry the message event and you should come. And my service sponsor now, he wasn't at the time, was like, come and I'll put you to work. And I was still like in the like psychosis-y phase, and I was like not trying to be seen. I was running from the IBI, Imaginary Bureau of Investigation, and they were like, we're going to have you be like the sign person. So I did that for about 15 minutes, and then I left. But it was so cool to see all these alcoholics just like getting together on 420 of all days and just like hanging out. And there was like a speaker and stuff. Again, I can only speak on the first 30 minutes I was there. I quickly got into service with my home group, Come As You Are. It's really awesome. It happens to be at this time. And this is what happens when you skip your home group. You get asked to speak. I started as secretary with my home group, and that was fun to get in the middle and get to know people, being in charge of like getting to know members and things like that. Both my sponsor and my service sponsor are very heavily involved on the district level, and one of my friends is involved in central office, and she was like, hey girl, we're doing a cakewalk, and we could really use your help. And I think that I've gone to like 3 or 4 AA events so far, and it's just so cool to see people come together, and there's a lot of work that goes into it, and a lot of the things that you go to and enjoy in AA is because someone is putting in countless hours of work to do it. And it's cool to be on, being able to help out a little bit more. I recently became the GSR of my home group. That stands for General Service Representative. I didn't know what that meant either. But I got to go to the assembly for area that happened in April. And that's for the whole area of our district too. Like they said, district 2, and then we have area. And area is like all the way half South Florida. I didn't have a position at the time. My sponsor was like, sleepover weekend, come on. So I just like went to a bunch of sessions. She was like, fly little birdie, go to any of the things that you want. I went to a grapevine session. I went to a current practices and all of these things. Then I got to see what an assembly business meeting looks like. And that is a lot of, it's very interesting. And I'm excited to go to my next one. That's in July. And you don't have to have, anyone in AA is welcome. You don't have to have a service position. And my whole motto in service and kind of just everything in life is like trial by fire. So the best way to learn is just being put out there and trying it. And I wouldn't have the opportunities I do now to be in service if it weren't for people that were further ahead of me in sobriety, getting me out of my comfort zone and asking me if I wanted to come, because I didn't have anything better to do, and I've learned a lot about the service world, and I think that it's very important to carry the message and be able to, I hope to do that for someone else someday as well. And it's a reminder that like we're not a glum lot. Like we can have fun in sobriety, like meetings are important, the steps are important, and then we can see that come to life through the events. And I don't know if that's been 10 minutes, but it feels like I've been talking for a while. So thank you.
Thank you, Anna. And tonight is a celebrants meeting, and our first and only celebrant tonight is Greg with 5 years.
I'm Greg. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety day is March 16th, 2020. It's May, so I'm up here for two reasons. One, I guess no one really wants to get sober in May, and I was the last one left. But two, I was not available in March because I was a groomsman in a wedding, and I can't think of a really better reason but to focus on that. The wedding was at the Tampa Palms Country Club. It was for someone in AA that I had met 5 years ago. He was a crucial part of my sobriety, still a good friend today. And I grew up right around that area. Last time I was there, countless years ago, I had a friend, and he had assumed his rich dad's son's identity. We rented a room there, bought copious amounts of alcohol, bought a lot of stuff from the pro shop to sell to buy other dry goods. And I just remember being in that place for like 2 days, just in a complete stupor. And then all of a sudden, we had a knock on our room door, and there were two policemen. They're like, "Which one of you is Russell?" I'm like, "Well, my name's Greg. His name's Derek, but he's Russell." They took him away and told me never to come back ever again. Luckily, they didn't trespass me or anything, but, you know, that was me while I was out for all my years, man. Like, I was just such a mess, always in trouble with the law, had to wake up with a drink or something else for really most of my life, long before I turned 18. I don't have enough time to go through the gifts that this program has given me, but to be able to, I had never been a groomsman in a wedding before. I did have one other opportunity years and years ago with a best friend that I grew up with, but I squandered it. I missed the flight to Hawaii due to my alcoholism, and to this day, he still doesn't talk to me. Sponsorship. My sponsor, Ryan, has been kind enough to speak tonight. He's been going through a lot as well. He's my third sponsor in AA. My first one, we didn't work out. My second one, we were together for years. He moved on, but, you know, we're still very good friends today. I was looking for a third one, and, like, I don't know, man. Ryan, I'm not going to sit up here and, like, gloat on him too much that I know he likes it, but no one ever has a bad thing to say about him, ever. You could ask a million people, and they all have wonderful things to say about him. They say, look at someone and, you know, do you want what they have? And, like, I want what he has, man. He's always happy and just such a great guy. 5 years sober, it feels great. I'm still not perfect to this day. Like, I'm not wearing a tie, right? My roommate Isaac is not in town. He's my go-to tie person. So I looked at it for a second. I was like, nope, not happening. I'm going to come up here and do the best I can. But that's enough out of me. Thank you all. Here's Ryan.
My name's Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 24th, 2002. This is my home group. I sponsor others, including Greg. Congratulations on 5 years. It's a man. It's, you know, I just love to celebrate with people, right? Because, you know, and like the fives, right? Like, there's always, like, I was thinking about it on the way here, and, you know, it was a big deal to have a week, right? When I had a week, it was a big deal to go to something the first time sober, right? And then to go to, like, that same thing the second time, be like, I made it through the first time, right? I'm gonna make it through this wedding too. But then it's like also, like, you know, 5 years, 10 years, like, all, it's just like, it's such an example of Alcoholics Anonymous working in someone's life. And I've not known Greg his whole sobriety, but I've talked to him a lot, right? I heard his fifth step, right? He's a different person, right? I can guarantee you that. And what I do now, I'm kind of getting old, right? I got a wife and kids and stuff like that. So when I start sponsoring somebody, I try and, you know, obviously I work the steps with them, but I try and do that, like, on the boat fishing, right? Because I could tell my wife, like, I got to do the step work, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, watch the kids, right? And so I took Greg out fishing when I first started sponsoring, or maybe not first, but, like, after a little bit, to, like, get to know each other better, that type of deal. We didn't catch anything, right? Hot as hell, not a damn fish, you know? And Terry's nodding because that's not abnormal. He's a good sport about it, right? And you know, and then I'll tell you too that him and Isaac took care of my dogs when my house had flooded in the hurricane, right? For like a month. My dogs are insane, right? Like, I my daughter would be easier to take care of because she's 10. My 2-year-old son and the dogs are, like, kind of the same deal, right? Like, they're all nuts. And you know, it's a big deal, right? And I love my dogs, right? And they were sending me pictures and, you know what I mean, stuff like that. And it's just like, you know, sponsorship to me, my sponsor says that the guys he sponsors help more than, you know, his sponsor ever has, right? And I agree with that. The guys I sponsor have helped me out so much, right? And I need both, right? It's not like my sponsor doesn't help me. It's just that the guys I sponsor, they help me see my inventory, right? They help me, you know, practice unconditional love. They help me practice, you know, open-mindedness and patience and all of those things that I can then go talk to my sponsor about where my shortcomings are. And so, you know, like I said, congrats, man. I love you. I'm just, you know, I'm excited for you. And I can tell you that on Monday I sneezed and I blew a blood vessel in my left eye, and so my whole eye is red, right? I look like a comic book villain. So if you come up and talk to me, I just wanted to get it out, or if I talk to you after the meeting and you're looking at me like I'm insane, that's all it was, right? That's not a promise in the big book, but I have made it to the age where I can sneeze and screw up my entire eye, right? And so it's been an interesting week, right? I did it, and my wife, I used to talk to her, so I was with my son, and we were just riding the escalator at the mall up and down, like 45 times or so, and I go back to my wife who's been shopping, and I'm just talking to her for like 10 seconds, and she's like, what the hell's wrong with your eye? I'm like, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't even feel it, and then I drove to Miami to go to a funeral on Tuesday, and when I went to bed, it was just the left side of my eye, and I woke up, it was my entire eye, like completely red, so it was an interesting funeral discussion, right? But yeah, it is what it is, right? So I tell you that I was a very weird kid growing up, right? Like, I'm a only child. I fractured my skull when I was 3. I had to wear a helmet for a year. That's just not cool, right? And I was in, like, daycare at the time, and I had He-Man stickers on it and all that kind of stuff to try and, you know, try and make it cooler, right? And I went to Busch Gardens with my mother. We were in the petting zoo, and they had a petting zoo, and a goat put his front hooves on my shoulder and was eating my He-Man sticker off of my helmet. I was just crying, right? And my mom drop-kicked the goat, and then we left the petting zoo, right? And so that's kind of like what I was working with, like, at a young age, right? Like, I grew up, I had, like, a bunch of imaginary friends because they're just way easier to handle, you know? And my parents got divorced when I was a kid. I went to a great, you know, wonderful Catholic school here in the area. I was, like, the only Jewish kid there for, like, 7 or 8 years. You know, I could have pointed to a lot of reasons why I was different, you know. Although I don't know that that matters, right? I think what mattered for me is I have this extreme self-centeredness, right? And it's not always, like, the big book talks about selfishness and self-centeredness as the root of our troubles. And when I was new, I only thought bad selfishness, right? Like steal, trying to get mine, you know, that type of stuff. I mean, I guess it's all about trying to get mine. But I do it in other ways, too. Like, you know, the book talks about I can do it in a way that's kind, you know what I mean, and giving. But it's all about manipulation. It's all just self-absorption. And I've had that as long as I can remember, right? So my aunt that passed on last week, she was to her funerals, her and my uncle. I went to their house when I was like 8 or 9 or 10 years old. I can't remember. And I was with all my cousins. I'm the baby of the cousins. And my cousin Michael, he had a rat tail, and he had lion shaved inside of his head, and he could break dance and skateboard. And this is like 89, right? So that's really cool. And I just wanted to be like Michael. And Michael laid down on the ground and put the tap of the keg in his mouth and started drinking out of it. And so I just, like, nobody was looking for a second, so I don't know how to drink out of a keg, right? I'm like 9. I've never seen it before. And so I lay down on the ground, I put the tap in my mouth, and I start drinking. And at that point, I'm into things like, you know, high C, right? Gatorade, you know, Pabst Blue Ribbon or whatever my uncle had on tap there. It's got a bad taste. But I remember, I was like, I just want to be like Michael, right? So I went as long as I could, and it didn't take long. I was tiny, you know? And I look at my daughter now, I just can't. She's a year older than I was, and it just makes me insane. But, you know, it didn't take much, right? I stood up, and literally my life from that moment till now was changed, right? And in a way that I couldn't explain. But the only thing I knew is it was like a deep breath, right? Like a warm blanket was put over me, right? I didn't like start breakdancing, right? I didn't feel any older or taller or cooler or anything like that. I just was okay where I was for basically the first time of my life. And the funny thing about it is, and I don't think I used these exact words, but I knew instinctually if I stop, this is going to go away, right? Because I hadn't drank a ton, and maybe it was already starting to go away. I don't know. But like the feeling, like I knew I had to keep it, right? And the book talks about that. It's called The Phenomenon of Craving. I didn't know any of those words at that point in my life, but it was 100% what was happening. So I laid back down on the ground, I put the tap in my mouth, and I just kept drinking, right? And I got drunk, and nothing bad happened. I was just a silly, you know, 9-year-old with my cousins, and they were goofing off, and I went to bed, and I woke up, and I wasn't hungover, and I didn't get in any real trouble. I think, I don't know if my mom knew or not, right? She probably wouldn't have. I mean, my mom was one of us, so you know, she probably would have cared that her 9-year-old was getting drunk, but I don't know, she wouldn't be heavy-handed with me, that's for sure. But I woke up and I was just like, I can't wait to do that as often as possible. And I did the best I could, right? I lived in a little, we lived on a little house on Davis Island that when my mom and dad got divorced, my mom kept. It was, you know, it was like whatever, like 1,200 square feet, one bathroom. Had a bunch of nice kids in the neighborhood that were about my age. A lot of them were like a year or two older than me. So we would just walk around and, you know, if your garage door was open, we'd go in your garage and get beers. And when one of their, you know, my mom didn't have a liquor cabinet. She had like, you know, plastic bottle vodka and that was it. And, but my neighbor across the street, his stepdad had a great liquor cabinet. And if they were gone, leaving us just on the streets roaming around, we were up, you know, in his liquor cabinet. And my friends would, you know, we'd all be like, I gave a drink of that, right? And I'm like, yeah, heck yeah. And they'd like take a couple and then they'd go off and they'd go fishing. And I'm like, wait, we should go back to the liquor cabinet, right? And I would try the best I could to get drunk. And, you know, it's hard as a kid. Like, I did everything I could, right? Steal from you. I'd ask people at the corner to buy me beer. And that's another thing that amazes me, right? Like, you know, a little kid that age asking for beer and people doing it, you know? Like, cool guy. I loved it, right? I'm not going to hate on it too much. But I just, like, I think about, my daughter walking up and doing something like that. I'm just like, oh, my God. But I guess if it's somebody else's kids, it's not too big of a deal. But, when I was a freshman in high school, I was, you know, I didn't have any friends, right? I just didn't. I was, like, the kid. I had two friends. There were these two girls that took pity on me. And I just, like, hung out with them. And then I was, like, 4'10", right? Like, I mean, I don't have a full beard yet. I'm almost 40. Well, I'm 44. And so I definitely didn't look like a man, right? And some of these guys in 9th, 10th grade looked like men. And so I wasn't hanging out with them. And I grew finally, like, for me. And, you know, like, when I was, like, 16, I got to, like, 5'7". I was like, you know what I mean? I'm in. And I fell in with this guy that was a little bit, he was a year younger than me, I think. But he was popular, right? And we became friends because we were in cross country. And we were running next to each other, and he goes, hey, do you drink? I said, oh, yeah, you know, because I did, it was true. And he's like, you smoke weed? I'm like, yeah, you know what I mean? And, like, you know, we're still friends today, right? Like, you know, the basis of a lasting friendship right there. And but I hung out with him. He was popular. I got to be popular by default. And it just, like, the drinking was starting to take off, right? And it was interesting because he was right there with me, right? He was doing all the stuff I was doing, right? He was getting drunk and blacking out. He was doing drugs. He was, you know what I mean, like, skipping school. The difference was is by the time I was a senior in high school, I was starting to be a daily drinker. By the time he was a senior in high school, he had made a determination that he was going to have fun that year and grow up, and then he went to an Ivy League college, and he graduated in the appropriate amount of time, right? And then came back and got, like, a master's degree and still would party here and there and have fun, and then settled down and got a wife, right? And the difference for me was, it's like I said, when I was 18, I was a freshman or a senior in high school, I'd gotten into college in October, and I filled up a water bottle like this with vodka, my mom's vodka, and I took it to school with me, and I started drinking every day, right? And there's probably, like, here and there, like, a couple days where I didn't make it. In fact, I know, so my Uncle Chuck, the same one, he was a heavy drinker at one point, and, you know, in his, like, 40s and 50s, he would drink all year, and he'd get, like, real big, and he'd get gout, and all the family would be mad at him for his, you know, drinking escapades, and so on January 1st, he quit until the Super Bowl, right? And so when I was, like, a freshman or sophomore in college, I was like, I'm going to do what Uncle Chuck does, and I'm going to quit from January 1st to the Super Bowl. I made it to, like, January 3rd or 4th, like, just smoking weed, and I was like, yeah, that's good enough, you know, and, but besides that, like, there were times, right, but it was, I was almost always drinking, and like I said, I went to Florida State. I went there. It was the number one party school in the nation when I applied. I applied because me and my best friend went and visited his older sister who was in a sorority, and I hung out with, like, 85 sorority girls and my best friend for a weekend, and I was like, I mean, I can't wait to go to college. It's going to be amazing. When I went to college, it was nothing like that for me, right? I did join a fraternity. And they would do things like when I was a pledge, right? They'd be like, all right, Ryan, drink this. And like, yeah, cool, you know? And they basically made me drink till I threw up, which is fine. I mean, I was going to do that anyway, so it wasn't a real big deal. I did it once one night where they, you know, were doing that to me, and I woke up in the ladies' bathroom floor of a fraternity house, which if you've ever been in one, is probably the worst place to ever go, right? Because that's where everyone thinks there's never girls in there. So they, you know, I mean, all the guys go in there, right? And so I'm, like, laying on the floor. I've been asleep there for 6 or 7 hours, and just, like, covered in vomit, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that was, you know, that was gross. But I tried to, like, every year at the end of the year, I would, you know, get, like, my report card. It'd be terrible, you know, because Because I would just, like, I'd want to go to school, right? I'd want to show up for friends. I'd want to do all of these things. But I would just drink. And it wasn't a huge battle, right? It would just was happening over and over again. And so, you know, like, it was getting bad, right? Let me think here. When I was 20, I took a class called golf at Florida State, which is what it sounds like, right? You know, it's 2 days a week. We went to the driving range on one of those days and hit golf balls, and we would have, actually, I don't really know. I didn't go. And one of my buddies that I've known since kindergarten, I should say, when I was drinking with the sorority girls, he was in that class, and I showed up once to get pee from him, right? Like, empty water bottle. Hey, dude, I'm trying to get a job at Ruby Tuesdays, you know, washing dishes. Pee in this bottle for me. And, you know, he's a nice guy, so he did. But then he was also like, dude, like, what's wrong with you? Like, we have a midterm today. In golf, right? So I went and took the midterm and then walked out with my pee, and I got a 98 on it, right? Because it's golf class, you know, like, all you have to do is watch golf once and you pretty much got the gist of it. But I failed that class, right? I failed every class I took that semester, and then I was like, okay, I'm gonna turn over a new leaf, right? I'm gonna get 9 a.m. classes and I'm gonna go to all of them, right? And I didn't make it to the first day. And I was like, man, that was really aggressive. And then I just failed all of those classes again. And I'll just tell you that I ended up moving back to Tampa because, you know, school didn't want me back. My parents were nicely paying for me to live there, right? I had a scholarship. I lost that, like, you know, basically instantaneously. I got back, and my dad's like, I ordered your transcript. I'm like, oh, that's going to be bad. You know what I mean? And he looked at it, and my dad's a really smart guy, right? My dad got, his mom died when he was 13, and he got in a lot of trouble down in Miami when he was like 12, 13, 14, when his mom was sick, and then when she died. And then he just changed his life, right? And pulled himself up by his bootstraps and, you know, got in with some good people and went to college and got straight A's in college and then got into medical school and graduated number one in his medical school and became like a really, you know, good doctor, doing all of these things. And I would have loved to, like, I didn't want to do any of the hard work he had, right? But, like, I like the idea of those accolades, you know? So when I get home and he's like, you failed golf class? Like, yeah, how does that happen? But he also knew, like, my drinking was getting out of control. But he also didn't know what to do about it. So he basically was like, look, you can do whatever you want. I'm sick of seeing you. You know, I think he gave me a small check, like, it's enough to put a security deposit on a house on Davis Island, or a house. It was like a quad. So it's two houses, or what, two studios in the back and two studios in the front. So I got that security deposit, and then I went on the interview circuit for getting a job. And at the time, there was two pizza places on Davis Island, so I interviewed at them both. I got offers and opportunities at them both, right? And it came down to, you know, one of them served liquor in the bar, and the other one didn't. So, like, and that's like a better 401k plan, right? So I took the liquor job, and they would pay you in cash at the end of every day. It's like a dream, you know? God, I loved it. They would pay me in cash. I'd walk into that bar, and I would just give them all the cash back, you know, and drink until 2:55 in the morning. And I think it's still the same here, but, you know, 3, they stopped selling booze here. And so I'm on Davis Island, and I got to run to 7-Eleven to get more booze, right, so I can pass out. It's like a 2-minute run. I got 5, but I'm drunk. So I'm like running. I take a big step, and then like my foot misses the earth, and I fall. Now I'm like bleeding out of my head. And I walk into the 7-Eleven like that, and just the overnight cashiers at the 7-Eleven look at me with the same look of disgust and shame that my parents look at me with when I walk into their house. And that's just like a kind of a demoralizing feeling, right? And then I would think, like, I'm just going to get enough to make me pass out, right? And then usually what would happen was at 6:55 on all weekdays besides Sunday, or all days besides Sunday, I would be at that 7-Eleven sitting on that curb waiting for 7 o'clock to roll around so I could get more booze and make me pass out finally. And I'd look at these people walking in dressed like this, right, getting a coffee, right? And I have no idea what their life looks like, but in the 3 seconds I see them walk in and get their donut and walk out, I know their life looks better than mine. And because, like, I just see him, and I knew, like, that guy didn't break into a single mother's house last night, crawl across her bedroom floor and take money out of her purse so you keep drinking. Now, granted, my mother's alcoholic. My mother's a single mother. My mother would have done anything for me, right? I didn't have to steal from her. I could have just said, Mom, I need more money to drink, and she would have given it to me. But I didn't want that shame, right? So I would instead, I'd jimmy the lock on her back sliding glass door, and I would do that. Right? And I knew those people didn't do that. I lived next door to one of my friends from high school, and this guy was, skinny, right? He was like 6'1", like 110 pounds. He had dreadlocks down to his butt. He worked two jobs, so he could smoke as much weed as he wanted, right? Like a huge stoner, but he always had beer in his fridge. So I'd walk into his house and I'd just steal from him, right? Basically, if you let me into your house, and I'm not like a big time robber, right? Like I'm not going to confront you about it. But if I get an opportunity to, I'm going to stick something in my pocket, right? I'm going to fill up my backpack with your booze. I'm not hardcore in any way. I forgot to mention when I'm doing this pizza delivery job, I finally pass out. I'd wake up at like 3 o'clock to go to this 4 o'clock job, and I'd get a 12 pack of beer. I'd put it on ice, put it in the backseat of my car. I'd start drinking again, and I don't know where it came from. I think my dad gave me somewhere when I was doing this work. He gave me a small TV, right? And I mean, it's like the early 2000s. Like, they had some better technology than this. He must have had it for a number of years. But it was like a black and white picture. It plugged into your cigarette adapter in your car. It had like a 6-foot rabbit ear that would stick out my passenger side window so I could watch TV and drink and drive and deliver pizza to y'all's houses, right? And, that's not safe. And there's not like a lot of channels you get either. So I don't know, but how I rolled. I just continue drinking, and I'd love to say that like there's some epic ending to my drinking, right? Like I sponsor some guys with like epic stories. My wife, I asked her once because what she thought, and she goes, "Yeah, it's just sad, right? Like you're just sad." And I was like, "Yeah, it's kind of true." And so, like I said, nothing happened. It's just every day was like that. Every day was like that. I was drinking all day long. I guess every once in a while I'd be different, right? Like there's a couple mornings where I'd wake up in my front yard in August, in Florida it's hot, and my neighbors are like looking over the fence at me like, "Bro, are you okay?" And I'm just like, "Yeah, I'll be all right, running inside," I don't know how to explain that quickly, so things like that would happen. I'd wake up sometimes and like not be able to open the driver's side door of my car because there'd be like black paint all down the side of it because I was driving home the night before, just swiped somebody's car. Kept going, and I do what any honorable person do. I call my insurance company and said that somebody hit and ran on me last night, and can you get this fixed? And actually, honestly, I drove around with my door like crushed in for like, now I'm delivering pizza with this TV and climbing over the passenger side seat, right? So I didn't have a girlfriend either, obviously. get a date like that, it's not easy. I don't know what happened. I just know that one day my dad came, like I hadn't seen him much, he invited me over to his house, which was really abnormal, and he just sat me down. He's like, "What's wrong with you?" And I'd wanted to actually tell him for about a month, I remember. I'd wake up and I would think, "I'm not going to drink today. I'm going to talk to my parents," right? And and I'd wake up with that disgust and that demoralization, all that stuff, and I would expect there to be like a huge drawn-out battle in my head of whether or not I'm going to drink again. And the fact is that 9 times out of 10, there was no fight. Right? It wasn't even necessarily a thought. It's just like the next step was drinking, right? And I would wake up, like I was already awake, but like, I'd just all of a sudden be drinking. And that happened more often. Every once in a while I'd fight with it, right, for an hour, make it, and well, that's good enough. And so my dad asked me, and I was like, "I just can't stop drinking, right? I don't know what's wrong with me." And so he got in the car and took me to my little house, and we got to the front door. And I'll tell you that if you live disgustingly enough, right, like I was, and if you leave dishes in the sink long enough, and if you leave trash all over the floor long enough, and pizza boxes and empty beer bottles and cigarette butts in them that you accidentally drank the night before and that type of stuff, bugs will just grow in your house, like mosquitoes and gnats and fruit flies. And it's really kind of a miracle of science, right? And I opened the door, and the bugs flew out, right? It's like there was like, I don't remember what speaker it was. We talked about, I brought Skid Row home, right? And that's what my little place looked like. And he took one look, and he's like, "Why don't you grab some stuff and meet me at the house, or meet me in the car, and I'll take you home." And my stepmother was quick, right? By the time we got back to the house, she had a huge bicycle lock on the fridge, locking up all the booze. And my dad said, just, wake me up if you need a drink, but he went to sleep. And right, and he slept on the floor next to my bed with his head against the door, like those old cop movies, where they, you know, sit outside on the chair smoking cigarettes. And about 2:30 in the morning, I'm shaking, I'm sweating, I'm throwing up and all this stuff. And he's like, Ryan, what's wrong with you? And I'm sick, I need a drink. He's like, go to bed, shut up, you know. And so it wasn't a comfortable night. And they thought my problem was lazy. I was lazy, which is a problem I had, but it wasn't the problem. And so for like 3 days, I was just sitting at their house detoxing. And every time I would sit down, they'd be like, go wash your car, go wash my car, do this, do that, you know, go weed. Now I'm like sweating out booze out front. And, I went to rehab not too long thereafter. Rehab, for my opinion, was like summer camp for adults. I loved it. I wore sweatpants nonstop. I smoked like 3 packs of cigarettes a day, you know, good 3 meals. I didn't have to worry about a thing. I took meditation class. We had arts and crafts. You know, I mean, I'd go back now if I could. And the best thing about it, though, was is they did take us to meetings at Alcoholics Anonymous at night. And I remember when they would take us out to these meetings, I felt like a sense of welcoming, right? But I didn't really relate yet. And then they brought this guy in, and he told his story. And he'd sober about 5 or 6 years like Greg. And he told my story, right? And it wasn't, in fact, his name, I think, was Brian. It's like, it was really close. But he was sober like 5 years. And I went up to him afterwards, and I told him I was alcoholic and I needed help. And then he talked to me like 5 or 10 minutes. I don't think I would listen to him. But that was a big deal, right? Because I've been seeing doctors and therapists and psychiatrists. I got hypnotized every Wednesday night when I was a junior in high school. And by that, I mean I went and sat on the couch where a guy tried to hypnotize me, but I'm too self-centered to be hypnotized. So I'm just sitting there like, what does it look like to be hypnotized so I can act like that, you know? And obviously, that didn't work. But this guy just told my story, right? And I told him the truth, like, for the first time. And got out of rehab. You know, series of circumstances, I ended up in a noon meeting, and my roommate from rehab had died the night before. I raised my hand at the end, said, I need help. A buddy of mine died last night. And that was it. There was this young woman who was sober like 6 months. Now, that was, like, extremely believable, right? 5 years, 10 years, 22 years, like, that's crazy, right? But 6 months was like, heck yeah, you know? And I'll tell you that at the end of my drinking, I was drinking beer, whiskey, and eating free pizza, right? So I was like 60 pounds overweight. It was all in my cheeks and in my stomach, and that was it, right? And I went back to being odd, right? And not like aggressive, just like I was a weird kid. Like, we'd have a conversation, I'd say something that should have been said 5 minutes earlier, right? Just out with it. And this girl came up and started talking to me, and, you know, I just was like, she's like, you should come to my home group, it was this meeting. And I knew there wasn't, like, she wasn't hitting on me, right? I knew that. I was smart enough to sense that, right? So why would she? But I can tell you that when I got in my car, ego, my sponsor talks about the deflation of the ego, it's so fast, you just missed it, right? Like, that's how much it deflates. By the time I got in my car, I was like, golly, she really loved me. You know what I mean? I can't wait to go to her home group. She had a boyfriend, right? She was not interested at all. But she brought me here, and I got involved with people because they did things like my soon-to-be sponsor asked me if I had a sponsor every 5 minutes that I stood there talking to nobody, right? And, people were, like, putting up chairs and stuff like that, and they would take down my number, and they would call me, and they'd take me to meetings and stuff like that. And I'll tell you about David in the back there. We went to ice cream after the home group one night. David's sober a couple weeks longer than me. And we're sitting there for like an hour. David utters 2 words. Entire hour, right? And then David leaves. And our friend Emery goes, this is the girl that helped me out. She's like, it's so amazing how much he's opening up, right? All right, sounds good. And I just got involved in the group, right? The group was busy. I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. David had the same sponsor. I did a fourth and fifth step, not because I wanted to get better. I did a fourth and fifth step because he had already done one and he was working on a second. And I didn't want to get too far behind in the pigeon race. I needed to make sure I stayed up in a high ranking, right? At least two, F2. So I did that. And I'll tell you this, when I didn't do it for the right motives, right? But I was thorough and honest. I dreamed about drinking every night for my first like 90 days of sobriety. Every night, like such realistic dreams, right? Like standing up thinking I did it, right? And I would think about it all day long. And I did this fourth and fifth step with my sponsor, And I remember leaving that night and waiting for the miracle, right? You're sitting there, it's like, man, it's like a miracle-producing step. I'm like, where's my job I didn't apply for, my big screen TV, right? You know what I mean? Like, I can't wait, man-made. That didn't happen. But what had happened was, a few months later, I'm in the car with my sponsor and some other people, and I remember thinking, I haven't had a dream about drinking. And I put it together, like, since that night, right? The obsession at that point was lifted in a way that was really miraculous. And then I just got busy in service, right? We got busy in service. I started sponsoring a bunch of people. We were taking, first David and I would take the car out to Goodwill and pick guys up. Then we were taking out two cars to Goodwill. At one point, we were looking at buying a small school bus to take and pick guys up at that Goodwill. And then the school bus was, like $3,000. We couldn't put that together. We're good. So we're sponsoring people. We were doing events. I was active in the home group. And my life, started to get just better and better and better. It was pretty amazing. It seemed like for my first 10 years of sobriety, it was like everything worked out, right? And I'll tell you that everything worked out my whole sobriety, but like it worked out well, right? Like, worked out to me now has become, it doesn't always work out the way I want it or in a way that's like comfortable or happy, right? But it works out. It was working out great, right? I got married to this beautiful woman. I go back to school. It took me like 10 years to graduate undergrad, but I did it, and I got a degree, and then went on, I got another one, and then I did another one after that, where I had to go to Gainesville, and I got to live there for, 9 months. And then I moved back to Tampa, and I got a job in Orlando, and I started, made my career field that I'm in now. It was awesome, right? And then, like I told you, my mom's drunk, right? She's an alcoholic. She's not here, I'll say it. She showed up to visit me one day, and she was like bright, bright yellow, right? Like school bus yellow. I took her back to her house, and we need to go to the hospital, blah, blah, blah. And I opened her house, the bugs flew out at me, right? I understand what that's like. She had terminal cirrhosis, right? She lived for about another year. I remember her house was disgusting, right? It was bad, and AA showed up and helped me, clean it up. I do remember there was a woman that had been sober a while, and she was there helping, and she called one of her new girls, and her poor new girl showed up, like, a little too dressed up, leather boots on, and I was like, they didn't tell you what you're doing today, right? Like, it's bad in here. I was like, let you organize her books, right? Because my mom had also, in addition to being an alcoholic, was a hoarder, right? So she had about, more than a library's worth of books just stacked up through all of the rooms in her house, and like, all right, you can organize them. Come to find out some, like, too many of them probably were smut books, right, which was weird for her adult son to find, It's like, Monica, you take care of that. She did all right for a year. She got sick. I came back. She was on hospice. I just showed up. And I was talking to my wife about this the other night, that the thing that my sponsor, one of the best things my first sponsor did for me, it did so much for me, but one of the best things he did is he called me out of the blue when my mom was on hospice, and he said, let's talk about your ninth step with your mother, right? And we talked about it, and he said, it sounds like you're good, right? You've made the direct amends, you've made the living amends, you've done the amends process with your mother. Just go there and sit with her and be a son and show her how much you love her, right? And so I did that, right? I was holding her hand when she took her last breath. I got to be a part of that, right? And I'm a mama's boy, right? So I'm not going to tell you that if I was drinking, I wouldn't have been there. I would have been there, right? It just would have been a much different scenario. It would not have been good. I found out the next day that I was going to be a father, right? My mom died. The next day I found out. Now my two girls are adopted, which is crazy if you think about it, right? If you think about the fact that I went through and the state of Florida deemed me fit to be a dad, right? Like, I didn't do it the old-fashioned way that time. A drunk like me doesn't get approved for things like to take care of a human, right? I got to do that. My daughter Nina was born. A year later, my daughter Emmy was born. After she was alive for a few months, we found out she had terminal brain cancer. AA showed up for me in a way I never expected. Well, I guess I did. I don't know, right? I wasn't thinking about much, right? I just lived in a hospital for 3 or 4 months. But every time I go by the waiting room, there'd be someone there, right? A lot of times it was Terry. Terry had left AA, right? He was drinking. And Terry was probably more sponsored for the time he was drinking than he was like 2 years prior to that, right? He's killing it, minus the drinking part. But then it's like all the people in AA were there, right? And so my daughter died, and that was tough. And I got off the beat. I'll tell you that. I was sober 14 or 15 years, and the closest I've ever been to a drink was 15 years. Sober 15 years. It was New Year's Eve, my wife was out of town, right? My wife had been sober in AA for like 10 years, and she left, and she started drinking. And she's not an alcoholic, thank God, right? Like, I, It took me a while to know that, right? But like the evidence is like overwhelmingly in her favor at this point, right? I would have burned the house down in about 3 weeks. And, you know, but she was out of town. I was with my daughter, who was two, by myself. I was at my father-in-law's house. There's nobody there. He's got like a full stacked liquor cabinet. Meanwhile, this didn't just hit me, right? Like I'm resentful. I don't have a God of my understanding at this point. I'm backing off of AA little by little, right? I'm just not. I'm way off the beam, right? And the best, I mean, like, AA is so funny, right? Because I'm like seconds and inches from a drink, because I'm 15 years sober. And a guy in the group calls me out of nowhere, like 11:45 on New Year's. He should be out with his family having a great time. Calls me, hey, Ryan, how's it going? And, you know, of course, my answer is, great, man. You know, how are you? And, but he talked me, and we got, you know, through it. And I'd love to say that I got right back on the beam at that point, but I didn't. I wanted to be, right? But I just wasn't, right? I think I did just barely enough to continue to be sober, right? And I don't recommend that because I think it was second and just a lot of times. And then about 20 years sober, I was like kind of getting back on the beam, but like, it, you know, I needed, like, it was like some fits and starts, right? Wasn't doing great, but about 20 years sober, I got the sponsor I have today, and I started to like really be sponsored again and accountable to person, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been sponsoring guys the whole time, a lot of the same guys, and you know, I get this sponsor, and then the wildest thing happens, right? Like, this guy's been my sponsor for 3 weeks, and I, for the first time in me having a sponsor, I text my sponsor, like, dude, I really need to talk to you, right? Because Monica and I were told by doctors we would never have a baby. You know, I mean, we never get pregnant, right? Carry a baby to term. And so, like, one day out of the blue, we're, like, done, right? I'm, like, 42 at this point, right? Like, yeah, I'm just going to travel and retire early and have fun, blah, blah, blah. And then Monica comes in, she's like, I'm pregnant, you know? And, like, she had, like, a whole big thing planned, right? Tell me she was pregnant, but that had gone away, like, 10 years ago, right? When we started adopting kids. And, you know, so we come to find out she's pregnant, right? Have this baby. My dad, right, he's a high-risk baby doctor, right? Or, I guess, pregnant lady doctor. And he's my wife's doctor, right? Like, it was interesting, right? Because it's his office, right? But we're in the ultrasound room. My wife's in her underwear getting an ultrasound. And I'm like, he just walks in. I'm like, Dad, look, I get it. It's your office, right? You probably do it with all your patients. But there's like a dual role here, right? She's also your daughter-in-law, right? Can you just knock, right? Say, I'm coming in, right? Give a little blanket action. And, you know, so we had this baby. And, you know, he's... Yeah, he looks just like me. Well, actually, now he's starting to look like Monica, too. But from, like, here down, it's like my spitting image. If you put a picture of my dad as a kid, me as a kid, and my son as a kid, it's like, all the reason you can tell is the graininess of the picture, right, of when it was taken. And, you know, I just, like, it's been a wild ride. You know, I'll tell you that much. It's been ups and downs and all kinds of good stuff. I can tell you that, like I said in the beginning, the guys I sponsor helped me more than anything I've done, right? And I've literally, since I was like 9 months sober, I've been sponsoring someone, right? And there's probably some time when I didn't have a guy I was sponsoring, but I don't know. Like, it wasn't that much, right? And I've gotten the opportunity to sponsor people for long periods of time. I've gotten the experience to watch people in AA grow up. I've gotten to be, you know, have the experience of just being a part of this thing, right? And it's just really, I mean, like my old grand sponsor used to talk about before he died. He talked about, like, somebody said he was a miracle, and his sponsor told him, you're not the miracle, right? AA is the miracle. You're a small part of it, right? And I relate to that, right? Because I, you know, I just came in and followed this guy around, and things started to work out, and things went well, and things didn't go well. But I've gotten to stay sober because of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And so I tried to be that in my home group, right? Like I said, I got a young kid. I got a kind of young kid, you know, wife. I don't get to as many physical meetings as I used to, right? When I was new and didn't have a job or a girlfriend or anything, right? That's like 10 meetings a week, right? Because, like, what else am I going to do? So I don't get to do that, but my responsibility is to fill up my life with AA, right? It's not, to me, I've come to find out, and this is somewhere where I slipped when I was off the beam, that's not like a cosign to just do nothing, right? What that means is I have to fill up my life for AA in different ways, right? I can't sit on every committee or, you know, I can't go to 7 meetings a week and show up an hour early and stay an hour late. But can I be really effective at my home group? I can be, right? I'm not always, but I can be. Can I call the guys I sponsor back? You know, do I answer when they call? Do I call random people that I don't sponsor, right? Am I reading the big book? Am I praying, reading, and you know, taking an inventory in the morning? Am I calling my sponsor? He told me to call Monday through Friday when I asked him to sponsor me. I've been calling him Monday through Friday, essentially, for, you know, like 3 years now. And I don't talk to them every day, but like just that action, like those actions, so staying a part of Alcoholics Anonymous, I think that's my responsibility, right? Because like, I don't know what experience I talked about tonight might help one person out there, but there's the opportunity for some experience I've had to help someone, right? They might be good experiences, they might be the hard ones I've been through, but you never know, right? So it's just my responsibility to be there, right? To be open and willing, to give my time, right? Like that's when guys ask me about sponsoring people, I just say it's just about giving your time, just about giving your time and your experience. That's all I've ever done, right? I can tell you that I've sponsored people for, you know, 10 plus years that have stayed sober, and I've sponsored other people for a couple days, right? And the way I do things didn't change. So what that means to me is it has very little to do with me as a sponsor, right? It's much more to do with the giving of time and experience and what they're willing to do, right? So I'm not worried about what I say. I just try and show up. I just try and be available. And, you know, that's it. Like I said, I'm really happy for you, Greg, right? I love that I'm part of your life, and you know, I get to watch you, right, be an AA member. And so congrats again, and thanks for having me.